Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. This is called A Hidden Show. A hidden show is when I post two shows very, very close together, so one of them is skipped over in the LRN podcast feed, and this is the show that I'm trying to skip over. Now, why would I do that? Well, the LRN podcast feed sometimes goes out and winds up being played on radio stations, and what I want to post here has some strong language and adult content, and that's the kind of stuff that could get certain people in trouble. So I'm happy to comply with that, but there's no reason why we shouldn't have plenty of shows in our podcast feed with strong language and adult content. So this is a little method I've figured out to get around that. It's the After School Sucks special from September 6th, 2012. This is usually what is considered bonus content, shows that I do not release. And we do one of these after every live show, almost every live show, for about an hour, I would say. Larkin Rose stuck with us, and it gave us a chance to continue and expand the conversation that we were having during the regular show, which became episode 160, Logic Saves Lives, Part 3, The Most Dangerous Superstition. I haven't done much editing here. I did take out one listener phone call, but you are going to hear that in the very next show, episode 162, Larkin Rose versus a caller. By the way, Larkin gets off at about somewhere near the 50-minute mark in this show, and you really don't need to listen after that. It kind of sputters out, and it's not really a good use of your time. I included it anyway if you want to hear. But once you hear Larkin hang up, you can move on to your next MP3. Somebody will email me and say, Brett, that was not a good use of my time. So I'm warning you right up front. Here it is, the After School Sucks special, September 6, 2012. Thanks for listening and take care. Okay, everybody, welcome back to the After School Sucks special. If you are watching on the live feed, you know that we now have JJ in the studio, so thanks for joining us. And let me put a camera on you. Let me put a better camera on you. Hold on a second. So where do we leave off? I think we're going to get one more call about the Constitution, and that's a thing that's happening. So the caller said it was a very important point that he had to make.
Alrighty.
But this appeal to force, I want to just give it a quick definition, alludes to the use of a stick or club. A baculum was a walking stick or staff to beat someone. Oh, man. As a logical fallacy, ad baculum, or the appeal to force, applies to the use of force and, by extension, the force of threats to win a debate. There are two types of logical error that may be involved in appeal to force. So the point that we're trying to make with this is that when people start to see through all of the arguments from authority, they then switch to this appeal to force. The government does. Right? I mean, this is always what's waiting right around the corner.
And other people sort of cheat and use the government's threat themselves. Like in an argument, if you're debating the morality of taxation, sometimes people resort to, well, don't pay and see what happens to you. Like,
as if like that made their point.
Obviously, it's moral because they'll beat the tar out of you if you don't do it. Like, awesome logic.
Someone said to me recently, I found this to be fascinating. They said, well, you know, there was another guy who preached peace and wanted to change everything, and his name was Jesus.
Oh, wow. And
look what happened to him.
Because they nailed him to a cross. So, like, how many levels of non-sector are there in that one?
I think my response was, sir, I'm baffled. I don't even
I give up. You win.
You right. Are the winner of all debates forever.
What's that rule when you bring up Nazis in a debate?
That's, oh, that's Godwin's law.
Okay, so that's like Godwin's law, only God's law. It's like you bring up Jesus in a debate and it's just like, you're a Nazi. That's the response. If someone brings up Jesus, that's you just say,
yeah. Had you been familiar prior to that mention of Godwin's law?
Yeah, I'd heard that before. And I'm guilty of that in a few cases.
Yeah.
I would use Stalin more often, but too many people don't know who he is. or Mao or
right. Yeah,
Boo.
I mean, this thing it dates back to the early 90s, right? Where Godwin was some professor that says, "Look, any debate has gone completely off the rails when a comparison is made to the Nazis." Well, maybe in 1991, okay, which is back even before Waco,
right?
A comparison to the Nazis. Between the Nazis and the American government might have seemed a lot more far-fetched, you know, almost 25 right. years ago than it seems today. So I think Godwin's law, your argument is invalid.
Well, I think most of the time when people are using Nazis to try to, like, you know, Nazi allegories to try to win an argument, I mean, it is very frequently specious.
It's easy for you to say.
Yeah, right? It's a specious argument. It's like you see the people at Tea Party rallies, like, saying with a sign saying no Obamacare and a picture of Obama with a Hitler mustache. Like, sure. That's an example right. of where Godwin's law is appropriate, because everybody knows that the Nazis were well known for pushing healthcare reform.
Right.
What?
They did a lot of testing. Well, Mendeleev, I mean, he was really working on that healthcare reform.
Yeah. But if
trying to impregnate human women with sperm from a German shepherd counts as healthcare reform, then yes, that is what the Nazis
I think
were
that
totally
was in the Bill
into.
Obama sign somewhere.
It probably was. We joke about this stuff, but somebody probably
we've never read the bills.
From the German shepherd lobby had that in there.
When people use the term Nazi and communist, those are my two favorite examples, they use them as sort of generic insults. And if you try to actually explain that there really are big philosophical similarities between the U.S. empire and the mentality of the Nazis and the communists, people don't even know what the words mean. So to them, the words are empty insults that don't really mean anything. And so when you actually use them to literally describe a belief system, they just think you're using it as a generic insult.
Right.
Like when you say socialist, they think you mean, oh, that's a bad word, instead of it actually means something. This is a belief system, a statist philosophy, but it's because they've been used as just sort of emotional insults for so long, people don't even know what the words mean. They don't know what the Nazi Party believed. They don't know what it actually advocated, or they would start to say, hey, look at all those similarities. That is pretty creepy.
Yeah, because people don't really see the dichotomy between what the Nazi Party said they were all about and what they actually did. And when they don't see that, then naturally they don't see the comparison, how it compares to what we're dealing with.
Right. But if you read pieces of a bunch of Hitler's speeches, if somebody got up and read them to a crowd of Americans, he'd get a standing ovation.
Right. Just,
as long as he didn't say where it came from.
Let's test that theory. This is from a book by Leonard Peikoff called The Ominous Parallels. Now, this book was written before Godwin's Law was even invented, which shows how ahead of the curve Peikoff was this. But it says this.
Well, he was trying to establish this precedent before Godwin's Law was, you know, fully
sneak
endorsed
it in before Godwin outlawed.
Right. All right. So this is chapter one, The Cause of Nazism. This is so much more effective if you just read this quote to somebody without them knowing the context of the conversation. But it is necessary, quote, it is necessary that the individual should finally come to realize that his own ego is of no importance in comparison with the existence of his nation. And that the position of the individual ego is conditioned solely by the interests of a nation as a whole, that above all, the unity of a nation's spirit and will are worth far more than the freedom and spirit of the individual. The state of mind which subordinates the interests of the ego to the conservation of the community is really the first premise of every truly humane culture. The basic attitude from which such activity arises, we call to distinguish it from egoism and selfishness and idealism. By this, we understand only the individual's capacity to make sacrifices for the community, for his fellow men. Unquote. These statements were made in our century by the leader of a major Western nation. His countrymen regarded his viewpoint as uncontroversial. His political program implemented it faithfully. The statements were made by Adolf Hitler, and he was describing the moral philosophy of Nazism.
Yep, that's exactly what I mean by people don't know what the Nazis said, or they'd say, ugh, that sounds a little bit too familiar. It's the collectivist mentality, and they don't, you know, it could have been Bill Clinton's speech, an Obama speech, maybe not quite a Bush speech. He was a little more rabidly fascist than Hitler was. But it's the same. It's the same message. But people just, like I said, they think they're, you know, communist and Nazi are just kind of bad words that don't mean anything. And they don't look close enough to realize the actual beliefs, the fundamental assumptions underlying them are alive and well in, you know, just about every quote unquote government in the world, especially in the U.S. But they'd rather think, well, Nazis are like bad German people. And that's all we need to know about it.
Well, because most of what we know about Nazis comes from watching, I mean, frankly, Indiana Jones movies, where they're right. One-dimensional, and they didn't say one thing
Hogan's
and then do another.
And,
yeah. Right. They didn't, in the movies or in sitcoms, those darn Nazis, that's our other sitcom. We'll have the Nutsies. The Nutsies will be for the kids, and we'll have those darn Nazis for the adults. But they never do one thing and say another. They're just evil through and through, and they step up to the podium, and they say, "We are going to kill everyone in the world," and they do it. But in real life, they didn't open with that.
No. Right. No. Yeah, right.
Wouldn't be a good opening speech. We just want to kill everybody. Yeah, yay!
Yeah, well, wait a minute. We're not sure about that.
Corey and I were watching a cartoon one day, and it was the League of Injustice, right? It was like
the Injustice League.
The Injustice League. So it's like you have, you know, what was Superman, Batman, the League of Justice.
The Justice League.
The Justice League, right?
And then
their enemy is called the fucking Injustice League. And I'm like, wait a minute, they don't even ascribe some kind of virtuous intention to what they're doing?
No, we're just the evil ones.
Oh, yep. Man. Like, these are like Ian Fleming bad guys here, the Nazis, as they're portrayed, you know, through a lot of these myths. But it was funny that we were talking about their healthcare reform. It was a social, it was a heavy welfare state from the 19th century. So the people, before Hitler even started his rise to power, were heavily, heavily dependent on the government. And even when you, if you took out the Prussian education system, gosh, I don't even think they would have had a choice but to go along with it, because they had been so beaten down into dependence by their welfare state. I don't know if all their, I mean, maybe I don't know too much about their healthcare system, but like, it's conceivable that healthcare was so affordable at one point that it wouldn't even need to be subsidized by the government. But I'm not an expert on that. But that was a socialist country. You know, people always equate it to fascism, but the Germans were the National Socialist Party. So
right.
Yeah. Well, and people like to hallucinate that there's far right of statism and far left. And when it gets powerful enough, they're the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Stalin and Hitler could have been twins, and their regimes were exactly the same. The idea that these are two drastic different choices we have to choose from. No, they're not. It's just, you know, which jackboot do you want in your throat?
It's a left giant or right? Douche and a turd sandwich.
Exactly.
Those are the choices you have.
I think some of the similarities between the German Nazi state and what's going on now is the two things that I see is, one is support the troops fervor mentality, nationalist. Yep. And then the other thing, good God, that's what happens when you're out drinking, singing karaoke at the bar, and then you come to an after show. It's like, damn, man, I got to pay attention.
A little more concentration involved here.
We should ease you into it with more karaoke.
Hey, can I sing something, guys?
Yep. This is called Apples and Bananas. I like to eat apples and bananas. Do you know the words?
No, but I can sing along.
And go. Here are the...
I like to eat apples and bananas.
Yep. All right, we're not doing that. Sorry, Larkin.
No, that's enough of that.
Just kidding.
All right.
But the solutions. Larkin has a solution, and I have a solution. I just want to quick say it.
Okay.
The solution to change our situation right now is art and media. Art and media has changed the culture of societies for thousands of years, and it has formed the cultures. In fact, culture, looking keen, if you dance on Sunday, you can be arrested. They don't follow that law anymore because the culture doesn't accept that law. The people don't accept that law. And they can have whatever laws they want on the books, but if the culture doesn't back it up, if the people and the slaves don't back it up with their authority, the law is useless. And Larkin, with his books and that sort of, you know, spreading the ideas, is an awesome way of converting individuals' mindsets, and it's all about individuals. Talk about things on an individual level, on one person at a time, one person has authority over themselves, self-ownership, And that's what I have to say.
Excellent. Larkin?
My solution is, first of all, to clarify the question. Because when people say, well, how would we handle this if not for government? To me, it sounds exactly like saying, well, what are we going to do about Christmas if Santa Claus isn't real? And I say, that Santa Claus isn't real. The solution has nothing to do with Santa Claus. It's not stinking real.
But
and if you sit around imagining that Santa is going to save the day and saying, well, we need him to because we don't know how the heck to do it ourselves.
Well, shit, there goes my plan.
Sorry if I messed up the plan there. But to say, literally to say, how do we deal with society's problems without government means how do we deal with society's problems without hallucinating a mythical being with superhuman powers and superhuman rights to save the day? Hallucinating something that isn't real doesn't help, ever. And there are some problems that are real problems that real people have to deal with, but imagining Santa Claus or government is never the answer.
How
because
we...
people do really stupid things when they imagine things that aren't real.
How are we going to fix climate change without unicorns?
Exactly.
Ooh, he's got
exactly.
You.
That's exactly what it is. And I keep trying to tell people, you can identify real problems, but when the question starts, without this mythical delusional belief, how are we going to? It shows that they're clinging on to it as an intellectual security blanket because they don't want to just accept, okay, there isn't such thing as unicorns, Santa, or government. Now, how do we as actual rational adults deal with this? Then the question is rational and you can actually come up with an answer. But when people cling to the delusion because they're too scared to face the question in the context of reality, the problem is the first half of their question. Because they actually think that we can bypass reality and morality and everything else with a magical tooth fairy called government.
Right.
And it doesn't help imagining something that isn't real.
I mean, you can see why people cling to it, because the alternative is a little scary to have your worldview shaken to that degree.
The alternative is anarchy.
Yeah, and that's what everybody first thinks of. As soon as you think about no government, immediately you imagine, when we imagine the world without government, people tend to imagine what it would be like if the government closed up shop right now.
Right, right.
You know, not that we evolved to that point, but that we shut down the government tomorrow, it'll be chaos in the streets. Right. And that's always the argument, and it's probably, I'm sure it's true.
Yeah, I think substitute anarchy. It's anarchy with maturity, and it's growing up. It's being personally responsible for yourself and your own well-being and your own situation and the benefit and the costs of that situation.
Right.
And there's too much childhood mentality going around. There's too much, I want a daddy.
In the most dangerous superstition, I get into the fact that anarchy, quote unquote, is what is. Because by definition, the absence of government is anarchy is what the
and
word
since,
means.
Since government doesn't exist.
Right. Anarchy is reality. And what people have to do is come to understand that and then deal with reality accordingly. Just like the Christmas. You know, okay, I get that Santa isn't real. Now, how do we make sure all the kids get presents? And, you know, then you can actually address reality in a rational way instead of saying, no, we need Santa. We got to fall back on Santa because I'm not really sure how things will work without him.
We worry so much about what people are, how to control people who are, you can't let people do whatever they want. But there are people who are allowed to do whatever they want.
Everybody already does whatever they want. And other people decide what to do to try to stop the people who want to do bad things. A lot of these phrases, people don't understand, like, well, people could do whatever they wanted. Well, people already can.
Right.
And they already do. Well, people would just decide for themselves what's right and wrong. Yeah, they already do.
That's exactly the same argument I hear from religious people arguing against atheism. Well, without religion, how do you know what's right and wrong?
You already decide for yourself what's right and wrong. Looking out at a world of uncertainty where you don't get to control the 7 billion people out there is sort of scary. And it feels more comfortable to have this mythology that, oh, don't worry, there's this big, all-powerful thing that's going to make sure you're safe and protected and taken care of. There's no such thing. There's just people. Some of them are nasty. Some of them are nice. The nice ones have to kind of figure out how to protect themselves against the nasty ones. but saying, yeah, we need a tooth fairy. Too many people are unpredictable. We need a tooth fairy. It doesn't help. Well, it really doesn't help.
Let's change the discussion just a little bit here, because there are people, maybe all of us at different times in our lives, but people who have never been introduced to any of this, who, if you said to them, government is a myth, what you've been told, what's been defined for you as government is mythical, right? But they have this very positive conception of what the state is, and they have experience in their lives where the people, you know, in objective reality, people in costumes were there to help them with some kind of crisis, with some kind of situation, because it happens over and over and over again.
Yep.
And, you know, let's remember, too, that the myth of government manifests in reality as people. And most of those people operate, I would say, in the majority, with pretty good intentions. And, you know, with this thing I've used on my show, I actually, at one time, Larkin, got this guy who worked for the Department of Homeland Security to come on my show.
How did you do that?
His name was Steve Ressler. It was actually one of my better shows. And he was in IT, and he worked in the Department of Homeland Security, and he organized something in Washington called the Government Doesn't Suck Rally. And I was like, I got a show called School Sucks. We got to get together. So, you know, he came on the show, and after we talked for about 45 minutes, and I tried to explain the non-aggression principle to him, and if people want to go back and hear that, I think it's like episode 55, 56, something like that. But in the end, I thought it was very important to identify the, just like there was a feudal pyramid, there is very much that kind of power pyramid today, where most of the pyramid, the foundation, certainly the bottom part of the pyramid, is, you know, all of the people who have this myth of government inflicted upon them. And then there's a very, very much smaller part that has, I used to divide it into, at the top you have predators, in the middle, a slightly larger thing, you have parasites, and then you have people, which is almost all of the pyramid. And, you know, then you have the managers of society, the politicians, the bureaucrats, and most of them even operate with probably pretty decent intentions. And we know that the people respond to moral arguments. Hitler used moral arguments to do all the stuff that he did. And at the top, not to get conspiratorial, you have a very, very small group of people who still probably tell themselves some degree of a story. Like, this is our planet, and these human beings who live on it are parasites, and they're useless. And they're uncultured, they're unenlightened, so we need to control them, we need to manage them, we need to farm them. But most people who work every day thinking that they work for something called government operate with good intentions, and a lot of people are helped by them. So what could you say to somebody like that?
Well, there's actually, yeah, there's a section in The Most Dangerous Superstition that talks about, you know, if the belief in government, when it's gone, what disappears and what doesn't disappear? Like when people say, well, who am I going to call if someone's breaking into my house, and who's going to protect me? And I say, well, who do you call now? Well, I call 911 and the cops show up. And I said, what if the same guy showed up, the same gun, he has the same skills, he can protect you the same way, but everybody involved understands that he's just a person, so that he doesn't show up and drag you away because he happens to notice a joint sitting in the corner.
Oh, geez.
So that's good, because normal people don't do that, just people with badges. He doesn't force you to pay for him if you don't think his services are worth it. But if you decide to pay for it and you give him a call, he shows up. In other words, what if everybody involved recognizes that everybody else involved is just a human? The guy doesn't disappear. He's not going to just dematerialize because the belief in government is gone. The gun won't dematerialize. His skills won't dematerialize. No resources will dematerialize. The only difference is he will actually answer to you because you're actually the customer, instead of answering to a ruling class. So it doesn't do away with anything positive to do away with the belief in government. You can still have all of that. And for people to understand, you know, taking care of the poor and all the, you know, every program you can imagine that government does, there's none of that. There's none of the good stuff that you can't do without the belief in government. The only stuff you can't do without the belief in government is stuff that everybody recognizes as bad if actual mortals do it. Mm. That's the only thing that goes away. All the good stuff stays.
I actually have it on good authority that if the government went away, that all the roads would immediately dissolve.
Yep.
Yeah, they would just evaporate.
I also like to bring up the idea, the same thing, private market solutions, but also bring into the equation pizzas. And people get pizzas delivered from all kinds of different vendors and different quality service. And they bring that into the equation, too, and being like, well, maybe you don't like the way this guy handled the situation, but there's six other pizza vendors or security vendors in the city that you can call, and some of them are better and some of them are worse, and you get to choose which one you want to pay for. And just,
right.
And I want the one that shows up in 30 minutes or less.
Yeah, right. And none of them put you in a cage if you decide not to pay for them to do it.
Right.
And that's, you know, just economically, that's a pretty huge incentive. If there was a pizza company that was allowed to cage you if you didn't buy a pizza from them every night, you could bet that their pizzas would be pretty damn bad because they have no incentive to make good pizza.
Exactly.
They could just show up at your house with a pizza and be like, here, that'll be $20. And you'll be like, I didn't order that. And they'd be like,
we don't care.
You're going in a cage
and we're
going
to eat in front of you.
This is actually the example that I used to originally formulate the idea for making this, you know, the analogy between government, school, and anything else, just to show you, like, if this myth didn't exist, how foreign a concept this would be to have somebody show up at your house with a pizza.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And demand that you pay for it.
But there's a little bit more complexity than that, because a lot of people, I mean, the great thing about a democratic system is that the costs are so thinly distributed, but the benefits are so finely concentrated. Most people never really want to, or never really are motivated to deal with any particular problem enough, because what does it cost them? You know, like $11 a year? For this thing to exist. So like if you got a tax bill and you paid $30,000 in taxes and it says, thank you, this money went into the incendiary components of a missile built by Northrop Grumman. You know, some people would be like, well, that's fucking outrageous.
You know? I don't want to pay for that.
I don't. Right. I'm not paying for that. But people don't even. It's far more abstract, and people also just accept it.
If you could show someone an infographic that said, like, your tax dollars for the past year killed this percentage of an Iraqi citizen, that would change people's opinions about
it. Someone should do an animated roulette wheel that rattles around. Let's see where your money, you know, some of your money went to this bureaucracy and $5 ended up with some poor person. Oh, your money went into a bomb that just landed on a house in Iraq. Let's
The trick to this roulette wheel, though, is that you just keep spinning it until eventually you've landed on every space.
Right. And then you realize, I did that all. I didn't really want to do that all. But people add their own delusions on top of it. I mean, there's somebody we know who said, well, they were actually saying, I'm proud that I finally earn enough to pay taxes. And I tried to avoid throwing up. I wasn't there when they said it. But somebody I know was talking to them and said, well, you don't like the war, right? The fact that they're shooting and blowing people up. Well, no, but you know, I like some of the other stuff it does. And like, wow, if I thought, you know, I'm giving to this charity, I just found out that on occasion they go and murder people. But, you know, they do some really good work.
In their mind, in their little internal world, none of their actual money went towards the war. Their money went towards welfare programs and,
they just,
you know, stuff like that.
Decide that that's where it went because they don't want to admit that they're funding a big, nasty, vicious, violent regime.
Once you admit that, now you've admitted to being a hypocrite.
I didn't know I could direct my money where I wanted to go using the law of attraction. That's basically what it sounds like,
wow.
Right?
You can't. You can't do that.
He's just not. There's probably a lot you don't know.
You know, it's funny. One time I was having, I have an uncle who's extraordinarily liberal. And, you know, I've done this breakdown with him before. and he really wants to hyper focus. I mean, our minds work like editors until we really learn how to have better control over our thoughts and cure ourselves of this. There is a comfort zone of beliefs, and our minds tend to work like these editors, where everything that is going to reinforce our comfortable belief system is going to be amplified, and everything that stands to contradict it is going to be minimized or edited out entirely. So he really loves to focus on welfare and, you know, the other kinds of, you know, healthcare, those kinds of things. Never probably lifted a finger, like most liberals, to help a poor person in their entire lives and just tell themselves this story. But one time he got upset about the Catholic Church. Now, we were all raised Catholic, and we've all let it go. But, you know, he is mad that the Catholic Church has this institutional policy of sexually abusing children.
Good reason, yeah.
And he's going off about this, and I'm sitting there like, oh, golden opportunity, golden opportunity.
Don't you get money to them?
No. I said, but think about all the charity work that they do. isn't it
reasonable
worth
a few raped little boys
that we would be willing to sacrifice a certain number of little boys every year just for all of these, you know, charities to be helped? And he thought that was the most fucking outrageous thing that could have come out of a human being's mouth.
Well, at least he didn't agree. Yeah, you're right.
If he agreed, he would have been consistent.
Yeah, I know.
Yes. Yeah.
It's for the children. I mean, the other ones.
At least he was inconsistent instead of consistently insane. At least in another context, he can recognize it. Now, if he could just translate it over to the other one, well, he might be sane twice.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how much it has to do with the fact that, you know, the little boys who were sacrificing to support, you know, the state are part of an enemy nation, or that they're brown, or that we don't know, we don't hear their story so much.
You know,
instead of getting raped by an old priest, they get shot to death.
Right. Well, one way to sort of expose the fact that it's really based on government worship is say to somebody, well, you know, tell you what, if you like helping the poor and you don't like the warmongering, how about if you don't pay any taxes and just go give some of your money, you know, as much as you would have paid in taxes, just go give that to some poor people.
Yeah.
Well, people can't do that. And people freak out. Why don't you just don't give any to the state? And it shows that they're uncomfortable with not paying tribute to the God called government. It isn't like to them, that's more important than where it actually goes. Cause you say, well, if you want to help the poor and not do warmongering, don't give any to the state. Go give it to some poor people. Even if it's the same amount, they'll still say, well, we can't all do that.
Why not?
Right.
That just betrays a stunning lack of imagination.
It seems like it. I don't want to generalize completely, but a lot of the times it seems like, you know, most people live their lives and they're never really happy. They're never really satisfied. They're never really completed by their own accomplishments because they're trained to please other people from a very young age, right? Mm-hmm. And I believe that there is a real desire that people have to be efficacious, to be good, to be helpful. And if it's not like they couldn't have done it, but they just life didn't work out that way. And if there is a way to buy into a myth of being part of a institution that does good, that exists for the purpose of good, if it just costs you $25,000 a year to be an integral part of such an amazing organization, well, I think that that's a fantasy that a lot of people really enjoy. And I think that's a real liberal thing. That's a real Hollywood thing, where the cognitive dissonance increases even more because these people are shoveling millions of dollars a year into the state. They can't believe that it's an evil institution. That's too much of an emotional liability. So they're all like, you know, let's make the government into like they talk about it like it's their fantasy baseball team. It's not. Yeah. You know, it never will be that. Go ahead.
And they try to leech virtue out of things that aren't even happening that the government's doing. Like people, oh, I'm so compassionate, I vote liberal. Oh, so you vote for your neighbor to be robbed to give to the poor. And you want credit for being compassionate and giving for voting for somebody who's going to violently give away your neighbor's money to somebody. And so it's their way to try to feel good about themselves without actually doing a damn thing themselves. And it's the same thing in the context of, I voted for the war on drugs, so I'm help cleaning up society. And it's like, well, you know, if you really think that's justified, go get a gun and go door to door and start dragging people away who smoke pot. And if you feel bad about that, maybe because it's evil.
Right.
And maybe you shouldn't do it. But people, they imagine virtue in themselves based on the authoritarian crap they advocate every 4 years when they push a button in a booth. And yet they take none of the responsibility. They take no guilt for it. Because if you turn around and say, hey, you just voted for something that got a bunch of decent people locked up. Oh, well, that's the democratic process. And it's, you know, I don't support everything they do, but yada, yada, yada. But they want to feel good out of doing something evil, basically voting. They want to take credit for, oh, I'm a compassionate liberal, I vote to rob my neighbors. And they talk as if it makes them virtuous. Or, well, what did you actually give? Oh, you just voted for them to take my money and give it. Oh, well, great.
Yeah, well, I mean, it has been drilled into us our entire lives that that is just about the most virtuous thing you can do, is to participate in this great, you know, society that we have.
Right. I think a big part of it is that through the public schooling, the media, the governments, the churches and whatnot, it's creativity is stifled. Intelligence is stifled. People who think outside the box, who step outside the lines, are quickly snapped back into position. And it sort of needs to be that way in order for this society to exist, in order for the government to have this sort of authority granted by the slave or the obedient. It needs to be this way, because if there are more intelligent, more outspoken people, this won't work. So yeah. I think it's by design in some respect and by circumstance in another respect. And I think if more people are just stronger willed or think outside the box sort of mentality, or just go with the flow, but be creative about how you do it and find different ways of doing things, I think we'd end up with a different society altogether.
Yeah, completely. And I think responsibility is a huge thing, because if people think, well, I don't have to go give to the poor, I don't have to go help somebody out because that's what government's for and I voted for them to do it, or think, you know, there's this crime in my neighborhood, we should ask for more police and we should, you know, how about if you go make there not be crime in your neighborhood? But people literally can't think like that when they're stuck in the authoritarian paradigm that says, well, we need the masters to come up with some solution. They never think that reality is their responsibility, that, you know, they say, well, something ought to be done about this. Well, is there any reason that you're not the one who ought to do something about it, whatever it might be? But they're trained, you know, because all the way through school, you learn, you know, what happens is not your responsibility. Your power consists of, you can go whine to the teacher and ask them to do something. That's it. You don't do anything on your own. You don't handle disputes on your own. You don't do anything. All you can do is go whine to authority, and then people grow up and that's all they do. They whine to authority, and they, where, you know, a few people could very quickly end crime in a neighborhood. If there's gang violence, it doesn't take that much to make it stop happening. If the people actually realize it's our responsibility not to dial 911, but to go make this stop. Or if people are homeless or poor or whatever, if people go, well, let's get together and actually help the people who need help, then they do it. But that's not the mentality that's trained into us. We're trained to look to authority.
When you talk about that sort of escape from responsibility, it made me think of something. Have you ever heard the word Amtssprache? I'm probably mispronouncing that.
I don't think so.
German. This was a reference to the form of bureaucraties that was spoken during the Nazi regime. And I think that this the most memorable manifestation for this, you know, for most people today that they've heard of is the Nuremberg Defense. It was my job. I was just doing my job.
Just following orders, yep.
And I think because of the training that exists here today that we're all too familiar with, that existed in a very similar fashion in that society then, that people are often trying to escape that. They don't want autonomy. They want somebody else to be responsible.
Yeah.
So the language that they spoke, the bureaucraties, was this deferral of power to somebody else, and that became known as the Nuremberg defense. I was just doing what I was told. I was just doing my job. And people, you hear this in places of employment today. So
mm-hmm.
very common, but it is the escape from responsibility and the fear of autonomy, I think, a lot of the time.
Yeah, and people are scared to think that the world is up to them. They want it to be somebody else's problem. So when they go vote and cheer some candidate, it's because he says, I'm going to make everything work. You're not, you stupid people. All you should do is vote for me and give me lots of power, because you can't do squat without me. But put me into power and I'll fix the world. And they like to hear that. They don't like to hear the message, hey, if you want, you know, when people say, well, how will this be handled? And I say, well, what are you going to do about it? Like, I'm not running for emperor. I'll do what I think I should do. What do you think you should do? Whatever it is, crime or drugs or poverty or invasion, whatever it is, people don't want to think, holy smokes, what am I going to do about this myself? They want to think, well, who can I whine to do this for me?
Right.
And it's just, if people don't get out of that mindset, they're just oppression waiting to happen, because all the tyrant has to do is say, hey, give me lots of power, I'll fix everything. Okay, yay, hope, change, blah, blah, blah.
And I think there is more ingredients to that, you know, what has been a valuable thing to add to that mix in the past has been some form of terror or fearful urgency. Germany's collapsing economy in the 30s, all of the real friction in their society between, you know, like the real right wingers and the communists, the left and the right, that introduced this element of panic and, at the very least, and most generally, emotion into the mix, and allowed people who had really no intellectual self-defense to basically accept whatever they were told, because already they couldn't defend themselves against all of the trickery of those who seek power. But now any possibility of thinking logically, even in the least, about that situation had been removed, because they had been put in a situation where they had to think about it emotionally, and logical and emotional thinking are not pals.
Right. And that, you know, the politician's favorite word is crisis. This is a crisis. We have to do something right now, or it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
And it's to make people feel powerless and like, oh my God, well, I certainly can't fix this crisis. Quick, put them into power. And so they'll make them up or exaggerate it or whatever. But yeah, you have to scare the hell out of people, or why would they ever give up their freedom? They're not just, if you just come along and say, I kind of want a bunch of your money, that doesn't work too well. But if you come along and say, oh, really horrible things are about to happen, but I have a plan to stop it, but I need your help, I need your vote, to blah, 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 then people go, oh my gosh, the world's way too scary. You know, we better put this guy up on a pedestal and give him tons of power. And that's always what tyrants feed off of. They change what they're scaring people with, but the template is always the same. Scare the hell out of people and say the only solution is giving me tons of power over everyone.
You know, I wonder why no politician in power ever hired that guy who does the movie trailers.
In a world spiraling out of control, one man,
one candidate.
Yeah. But we've covered everything I want to cover. I really appreciate you sticking with us, an extra hour and a half tonight, Larkin. We still have people listening. So if anyone wants to sneak in one last call, 843 join SSP, just like it says on your screen, if you're watching, Skype in School Sucks Live. And then we'll get out of here. It's hot up here, isn't it, guys? Yeah, you got the fan on you?
No. It all comes back to maturity once again. It's all maturity. It's all feeling like a child and not giving the child the confidence to be an adult and be personally responsible. It's just all comes back to that.
You can be a statist or you can grow the hell up.
Exactly.
And, you know, it is hard to, I think, take on the state. You know, a lot of people learn about libertarianism and they say, oh, well, you know, I'm going to do some end the Fed. Well, I think an important question that people should ask themselves prior to doing that, and it was a question that I didn't ask myself enough when I first started understanding these ideas, was what kind of shape am I in to do anything? And I think there is a sort of mental and I hate to use the word spiritual, but I guess I'll use it in the sense like how well do you deal with your spirits being crushed? Fitness that you kind of have to have before you enter into this stuff, because a lot of people who are brought in by what was that guy's name? He was the politician.
He was an
older guy. He ran for president.
Gary Johnson?
No, older.
Than
like
that.
Further back in time.
Oh
yeah, man. I don't know.
Sorry,
I don't pay attention.
Ron
to that.
Paul.
Oh my God!
Ron Paul was a man who, in the first decade of the 21st century, ran for president. To be serious, was very helpful thing for me at the time. It's so easy for me to bash on that today more than I should, because a lot of us recognize that this was a valuable way to educate people, and a lot of anarchists participated in supporting Ron Paul as a tool to insert some of these ideas into the mainstream media. And I hope, you know, that people were careful about, you know, doing it in a way that didn't make it look like we thought there was an answer that the system or the government had for society. But I think it unfortunately it came across that way.
I think they were so subtle about inserting these ideas into the media that I don't remember seeing anything about Ron Paul on any TV station ever.
Right. Whoa. Yeah, dude, it's deep. I think honestly though, you mentioned spirit, and I think that's a very important topic. And that it's so easy for people to be atheists in mindset where they dismiss the idea of the human spirit, which has been written about in plays and all kinds of things throughout time, and as I believe a very real thing. The spirit is very real. It is a powerhouse of energy that can give you the confidence to be sovereign, to be an individual, and to command your own life. And that if that's beaten out of you, then you're nothing more than a physical widget to be used in a machine.
An android meat sack.
That's right.
As my friend Paul Verge once said.
So I believe spirit is critical in overcoming government and religion and mysticism and dogma and duty, ritual, all of these things.
Yeah, duty. That was one of the defining things in Nazi Germany. I know we've mentioned our friends, the Nazis. This was our idea, Larkin, for a cartoon. We want to, as America becomes more like Nazi Germany, we want to, and that comparison becomes, you know, people don't say, oh, Godwin's law. They say, oh, yeah, it is like that. There's going to need to be public relations campaigns to take that Nazi as villain.
We're taking it back.
Yeah. It needs to be sort of transformed into.
We're taking Nazism back.
The fun Nazi.
Yeah,
so
the
we,
fun
we,
Nazi. So I mean, they did it with Stalin. Why can't they go back and do it with Hitler?
Right. It's so true. Corey came up with this idea. I came up with the name, but right. Then Corey really nailed it, that they are, it's a cartoon, and it's going to be for children, and it's going to be called the Nutsies, but they're all squirrels, and they wear the uniforms, and they just go on fun adventures where they measure people's heads to see if they're Aryans, and they look for treasures, and it's really going to help people accept fascism. So
yeah, because it's a good thing.
But, why does this camera keep feeling?
You could probably get a grant from Obama for that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Hey, you guys can make some easy government money.
Yeah, do it.
I think if we presented that idea to him as a way to get people to accept fascism, he'd be like, what do you mean, like, to accept fascism as if they weren't already doing so? Get the fuck out of my office.
Like they haven't yet? What's wrong with you?
All right. So on that note, I think we'll call it a night here.
Yeah.
Hey, I hope you, I'm really kind of, surprised that, I waited 160 episodes to have you on, but I hope you'll come back again.
In less than 160 more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, this is fun.
And maybe we could do like a little bit more organized and focused show. I know the live show is a little tricky because we've got breaks, we've got callers. It's easy for things to get derailed.
Yeah, I don't mind the anarchy.
yeah. So, you know, I'll probably release this in two different things. I'll put it up on YouTube as the whole show, and then I'll probably edit the podcast down to something that's a little bit tighter. But yeah, that was great, Larkin. Thanks for taking all the time, and you know, I have your number, I have your email, so we'll be in touch and we'll do this again soon.
Yeah, fling me another in a couple months and we'll do it again.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we'll let you go. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye.
All right, guys.
Wow.
Oh, where are my headphones? Hi. I'm still here.
Wow.
Hey, if you're listening and you're enjoying this for free, maybe for the first time, I just want to tell you that you can subscribe to the show and I will send you more bonus content like this. You can see it for free live, but there are a lot of these after shows. They've got some funny moments, I think.
They do, yeah.
We have done one of these for almost every week that we've done the show. So there'll be 15 of these in the bonus content section. We also do pre-shows, which are all, you know, we're not have to follow the rules of radio in that. So they can be kind of loose and enjoyable. And I've got a bunch of podcasts that I've never released, a bunch of shows that I've archived. We have 90 people right now who have signed up for at least $6 a month, but we need like 150. So if you enjoy what you saw tonight, consider doing that.
That's great.
And yeah.
That support is very valuable.
Yeah. Well, here's the reason why it's important to me. Now, do I use that money for the show? Yes. I just bought a Logitech 910 Pro, which is a better webcam than anything that you're, you know, seeing the show through tonight. It's the second best webcam that they make because I think they just came out with a 920. But it's a 10 megapixel camera, and I'm going to eventually get two of them. They're about, you know, $100 each. Lots of other stuff, little things that you don't need to hear about. USB extension cords, this computer that we stream the show from. Tripod. I bought that tripod there today. You can't see it, but wait a minute. Yes, you can. I could show it to you. Look at this. I can show you everything. There, the co-host. They are unpaid. One day, maybe I could even pay people to do it. But the most important.
You don't get paid.
That would be great. Well, I, you know.
Oh.
Oh shit! Awkward.
I mean, he got paid just to show up for the after show. That's what you're telling me.
Even.
The most important thing to me is that, you know, the work that I do and the business that I'm trying to build has a good hourly wage, but it requires a lot of unpaid work. Let me just see if people are dropping off. They're like, he's talking about money. No, it looks like new people are coming in. New people are coming in. Hello. Welcome. Join the chat, even though we're about to end the show. Someone says, I'm awake. Sing. Oh, Daryl. Maybe next week.
Is it Daryl?
No, it's not a Daryl that we know.
Okay.
That I know anyway.
Can we be sure that that's actually him?
We need pics.
That could be anybody in that chat window.
No, this is actually, Ustream has two different things. They have a chat where people can be anonymous, but then they also have a social stream where I think people have to log in through Facebook. And no one chatted tonight. Usually the chat was like very active last week. There was a lot of people talking in there. So hopefully I need to continue to figure out better ways to promote this and ways to make it a better experience. So one of the future things that subscriber money will go to is removing the ads from Ustream, which is very expensive, but one day I would like to do that. The time is the most important thing, because I was saying, like, I can make a very good wage hourly at what I do, but there's a lot of unpaid time and research and marketing that has to go into getting those hours. So I really feel like this needs to produce a certain amount of money for me for it to be worth my time, you know, because I'm an adult man here that has to have a serious adult life.
Yes, definitely.
So it's great to be able to do this, but
how many episodes now?
This will be the 160th episode of the show.
Is that once per week?
Roughly once per week. Yeah.
So 3 years, roughly.
3 years. We just had our 3 year anniversary at the beginning.
Spectacular.
We had our 3 year anniversary a month ago today.
Congratulations.
We're 37 months old.
Amazing.
as a full-time active, well, as a former full-time activist, I can tell you the life of austerity that a full-time activist or media person that doesn't get paid, it's a very low life, very, very scraping by. And I'm sure Brett's doing better than that, but it's still, it's difficult. It's valuable, but
yeah,
challenging.
Unfortunately, I developed a very semi-like high standard of living for an activist prior to becoming one.
Yes.
So now I have to maintain it. Like, I can't, I will not.
I didn't do that. I just dropped it all. I was getting paid very well to build brand new diamond-turning CNC lathes, top of the line, high tech.
Maybe I'm a snob. I won't.
No, standards are great.
Maybe. But don't, I won't drive a Ford Fiesta. Try to give me one.
He'll sell it.
I'll push it off a bridge.
Oh, wow.
I will not eat at Taco Bell.
Okay.
I will not wear Lee jeans.
Okay.
Wait, I really feel like we need to make this rhyme.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it started to sound like a Dr. Seuss bit.
Yes,
I will not eat at Taco Bell. I'm terrible at coming up with rhymes, but you get the idea.
Yeah, yeah. He'll ring that bell. Isn't that how you, when you take crack rock and you make it liquid and then you inject it? It's called bell ringer? Is that what something happens?
I don't know. I've never heard of that. I like to oops
and the new news. How about you?
What are we doing?
We're playing music.
This is fantastic.
Do we have to? I really, you know.
I will not drive a Ford Fiesta. I will not eat a Taco Bell. I will not wear a pair of Lee jeans. Oh, I just cut to Larkin Rose. What do you got?
I got nothing.
I own a pair of Lee jeans. This is very pretentious.
I rented a Ford Fiesta when I was in Atlanta last week, and it was it wasn't so bad.
I won't vote
nice.
For Gary Johnson.
What?
Yeah, that's right.
I won't vote for him.
Fuck voting for Gary Johnson. It's not going to do a goddamn thing.
Fuck voting.
Okay.
Fuck America.
Fuck yeah!
All right, this has gone off the rails. We're not trying to recreate Wheels Off Liberty, so we're gonna call it a night.
Speaking of which, you can see Brett and his performance with the Wheels Off Liberty podcast from Porkfest 2012 tomorrow on the internet.
In a world where men were expected to drive a Ford Fiesta through the Taco Bell drive-thru, one man
spilled nacho sauce on his Lee jeans.
Planted his feet. Besides the river of truth and said, no, I will not drive a Ford Fiesta. I will not eat at Taco Bell.
No me gusta.
No.
I mean, how long have we been on? Let's see.
It is almost 2:00.
Yeah, this recording is an hour and 37 minutes long. So that's enough for an after show. Well, somebody just gets in the chat. Somebody gets in the chat at 1:50 a.m. and says, as far as experience goes, it is. Nothing can ever happen outside of now. Sir, are you in the right chat room?
I agree. All we have is now.
Yeah. Yesterday has nothing for you.
It's gone.
No. Tomorrow doesn't exist.
I'm tired.
Yep.
I'm just saying.
It's time to say goodbye.
Yes, I thought I'd throw that out.
Another Ustreamer says, I don't know about that. Okay, well, you guys have it out in the chat. It is a school night. We're going to call that a show. I'm going to stop this recording. Thanks for watching the After School Sucks special. Or if you're watching this recording, you're probably a subscriber to the website. So thanks.
And you probably didn't hear the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, you probably stopped listening a while ago. You're probably like, this is what I'm doing.
Or if you're listening to the recorded version, this was all edited out. So why am I even saying
this? None of this will be in the regular show.
Right.
All right. Stopping recording. Thanks.
In the world. GG.
All right. Still brought. I got to put.
Oh.
I like to leave the cameras on while we clean up. So, yeah, you guys just keep talking while...
Clean up.
Yeah.
He's cleaning up. Did we just lose something? Something happened?
Where's that sick beat coming from?
Look at this fun little fan. Or is there a camera that's still running?
This is a little fan I bought for $14.
And you can point it. You got ripped off.
What?
That is not worth $14.
It was the only fucking fan in Manchester.
So my campaign to change the name of the city to Fanchester is probably not going to go very far.
I wish that was recorded. Shit, the best things are never recorded.